He's sitting on a bar stool, and he looks like he's not much older than I am. He's got blonde hair, much lighter than mine. Draco blonde. He's wearing a polo shirt and normal jeans, and he's very cute. And I think he might be drunk. "What's your name, Alex?" he says to me, sliding off the bar stool. When he stands, he's almost a head taller than me, and he smells like deodorant. He has extremely white teeth. "Simon," I say. "Simple Simon Metapyman." He giggles. He's definitely drunk. "I'm Peter," he says, and I think, "Peter, Peter, Pumpkin Eater." "Don't move," he says. "I'm buying you a drink." He puts a hand on my elbow and then turns to the bar, and all of a sudden I'm holding an honest-to-God martini glass full of something green. "Like apples," says Peter. I take a sip, and it's not awful. "Thanks," I say, and the fluttery feeling takes over completely. I don't even know. This is so totally different from my normal. "You have amazing eyes," Peter says, smiling down at me. Then the song changes to something with a heavy thumping bass. He opens his mouth to say something else, but the words get swallowed. "What?" He takes a step closer. "Are you a student?" "Oh," I say. "Yes." My heart pounds. He stands close enough that our drinks are touching. "Me too. I'm at Emory. I'm a junior. Hold on." He empties the rest of his glass in one big swallow, and then turns back to the bar. I crane my neck over the crowd and look for Nick and Abby. They've been seated at a table across the room, and they're watching me, looking uneasy. Abby sees me looking and waves frantically. I grin and wave back. But then Peter's hand is on my arm again, and he hands me a shot glass filled with something bright orange, like that cold medicine, like liquid triaminic. But I'm only half done with my apple drink, so I sort of chug it and hand the empty glass back to him. And then he clinks his shot of triaminic against mine and makes it disappear. I sip mine, and it tastes like orange soda. And Peter laughs and tugs at my fingertips. "Simon," he says, "have you ever taken a shot before?" I shake my head. "Aw, okay. Tilt your head back and just..." He demonstrates on his empty shot glass. "Okay?" "Okay," I say. And that warm, happy feeling starts to creep in. I take the shot in two gulps, and I manage not to spit anything. And I grin at Peter, and he takes my glass away. And then he takes my other hand and laces his fingers through mine. "Cute, Simon," he says. "Where are you from?" "Shady Creek," I say. "Okay," he says, and I can tell he hasn't heard of it. But he smiles and sits back down on his bar stool and pulls me closer. And his eyes are sort of hazel, and I sort of like this. And talking is just easier now, and it's easier than not talking. And everything I say is the right thing. And he nods and laughs and presses my palms. I tell him about Abby and Nick, who I'm trying not to look at, because every time I look at them, their eyes start yelling at me. And then Peter tells me about his friends, and he says, "Oh my gosh, you have to meet my friends. You have to meet Alex." So he buys us each another triaminic shot, and then he takes me by the hand and leads me to a big round table in the corner of the room. Peter's friends are a big group of mostly guys, and they're all cute, and everything is spinning. "This is Simon," Peter says, flinging his arm around me and hugging me sideways. He introduces everyone, and I forget their names instantly, except for Alex, whom Peter presents by saying, "Meet your doppelganger." But it's really a little baffling, because Alex doesn't look like me at all. I mean, we're both white, but even our famously similar hair is totally different. His is purposely messy. Mine is just messy. But Peter keeps looking back and forth between us and giggling, and someone sits on someone else's lap to clear a chair for me, and someone passes me a beer. I mean, drinks are just everywhere. Peter's friends are loud and funny, and I laugh so hard I'm hiccuping. But I can't even remember what I'm laughing about. And Peter's arm is tight around my shoulders, and at one point out of nowhere, he leans over to kiss me on the cheek. It's this strange other universe. It's like having a boyfriend. And somehow I start telling them about Martin and the emails, and how he actually freaking blackmailed me. And it's actually kind of a hilarious story, now that I think about it. And everyone is full-on belly laughing, and the one girl at the table says, "Oh my God, Peter, oh my God, he's adorable." And it feels amazing. But then Peter leans toward me, and his lips are close to my ear, and he says, "Are you in high school?" "I'm a junior," I say. "In high school," he repeats. His arm is still around me. "How old are you?" 17, I whisper, feeling sheepish. He looks at me and shakes his head. "Oh, honey," he says, smiling sadly. "No, no." "No?" I ask. "Who did you come here with? Where are your friends, cute Simon?" I point out Nick and Abby. "Ah," he says. He helps me up and holds my hand, and the room keeps lurching, but I end up in a chair somehow. Next to Abby and across from Nick, in front of an untouched cheeseburger. Cold, but totally plain and perfect, with nothing green and lots of fries. "Goodbye, cute Simon," says Peter, hugging me and then kissing me on the forehead. "Go be 17. And then he stumbles away, and Abby and Nick look like they don't know whether to laugh or panic. Oh my God, I love them. I mean, I seriously love them. But I feel sort of wavy inside. "How much did you have?" asks Nick. I try to count it on my fingers. "Forget it. I don't want to know. Just eat something." "I love it here," I say. "I can see that," says Abby, shoving a French fry into my mouth. "But did you see his teeth?" I ask. "He had, like, the whitest freaking teeth I've ever seen. I bet he uses those things, the crest things." "White strips," says Abby. She's got her arm around my waist, and Nick's got his arm around my other waist. I mean, my same waist. And my arms are around their shoulders, because I love them so freaking much. "Definitely white strips," I sigh. "He's in college." "So we've heard," Abby says. It's a perfect night. Everything is perfect. It's not even cold out anymore. It's a Friday night, and we're not at the Waffle House, and we're not playing Assassin's Creed in Nick's basement, and we're not pining for blue. We are out, and we are alive, and everyone in the universe is out here right now. "Hi," I say to somebody. I smile at everyone we pass.
"Simon, good Lord," says Abby.
"All right," says Nick. "You're taking shotgun spear."
"What? Why?"
"Because I don't think Abby needs your vomit in her mom's upholstery."
"I'm not gonna vom," I say.
But as soon as the words come out, there's this ominous twist in my gut. So I take the front and crack the window, and the cold air feels sharp and refreshing on my face. I shut my eyes and lean my head back. And then my eyes snap open.
"Wait, where are we going?" I ask.
Abby pauses to let some car pull ahead of her. "To my house," she says. "College Park."
"But I forgot my shirt," I say. "Can we stop at my house?"
"Total opposite direction," says Abby.
"Fuck," I say. "Fuck, fuck, fuck."
"I can lend you an extra shirt," says Abby. "I'm sure we have some of my brother's stuff down here."
"Also, you're wearing a shirt," says Nick.
"No, no, it's not to wear," I say.
"Then what's it for?" says Abby.
"I can't wear it," I explain. "That would be weird. I have to have it under my pillow."
"Because that's not weird," says Nick.
"It's an Elliot Smith shirt. Did you know he stabbed himself when we were 5? That's why I never made it to his shows." I close my eyes.
Do you believe in an afterlife? Nick, do Jewish people believe in heaven?
All right, says Nick. He and Abby exchange some kind of look in the rearview mirror, and then Abby moves over to the right lane. She takes the turn for the highway, and when she merges on, I realize we're going north. Back to Shady Creek. Back to get my shirt. Abby, did I mention you are the absolute best person in the entire universe? Oh my God, I love you so much. I love you more than Nick loves you. Abby laughs, and Nick starts coughing, and I feel a little nervous because now I can't remember if it's a secret that Nick loves Abby. I should probably keep talking. Abby, what if you became my sister? I need new sisters. What's wrong with your old sisters? She says. They're terrible, I say. Nora's never home anymore, and now Alice has a boyfriend. How is that terrible? Asks Abby. Alice has a boyfriend? Asks Nick. But they're supposed to be Alice and Nora. They're not supposed to be different, I explain. They're not allowed to change? Abby laughs. But you're changing. You're different than you were 5 months ago.
I'm not different.
Simon, I just watched you pick up a random guy in a gay bar. You're wearing eyeliner, and you're completely wasted.
I'm not wasted.
Abby and Nick look at each other again in the mirror and bust up laughing.
And he wasn't a random guy.
He wasn't, says Abby.
He was a random college guy, I remind her.
Ah, she says. Abby pulls into my driveway and puts the car in park, and I hug her and say, thank you, thank you, thank you. She ruffles my hair.
Okay, 1 second, I say. Don't go anywhere.
The driveway is a little lurchy, but not so bad. It takes me a minute to figure out my key. The lights in the entryway are off, but the TV is on. And I guess I thought my parents would be asleep by now, but they're tucked onto the couch wearing pajama pants with Bieber wedged between them.
What are you doing home, kid? Asks my dad. I have to get a t-shirt, I say.
But I think that might not sound right, so I try again.
I'm wearing a shirt, but I have to get a shirt to bring to Abby's house because it's a certain shirt and it's not a big deal, but I need it.
Okay, my mom says, and her eyes cut to my dad.
Are you watching The Wire? I ask.
It's paused now.
Oh my God. This is what you do when I'm not home. You watch scripted TV.
And now I can't stop laughing. Simon, says my dad, looking confused and stern and amused all at once. Is there something you'd like to tell us?
I'm gay, I say, and I giggle.
Giggles keep escaping around the edges.
Okay, sit down, he says, and I'm about to make a joke, but he keeps looking at me, so I sit on the arm of the love seat.
You're drunk. He looks a little stunned. I shrug. Who drove? He asks.
Abby? Did she drink?
Dad, come on, no.
He tips his palms up. No, God! Em, do you want to...
Yup, my mom says, shifting Bieber off her legs. And then she gets off the couch and goes out to the entryway, and I hear the front door open and shut. She's going out there to talk to Abby? I say.
Seriously? You guys don't even trust me?
Well, I don't know why we should, Simon. You show up at 10:30, obviously drunk, and you don't seem to think that's a problem, so...
So you're saying the problem is I'm not trying to hide it. The problem is I'm not lying to you.
My dad stands up suddenly, and I look at him, and I realize he's really freaking pissed off, which is so unusual that it makes me nervous, but it also makes me a little fearless, and so I say,
do you like it better when I lie about things? It probably sucks for you now that you can't make fun of gay people anymore. I bet Mom won't let you, right?
Simon, says my dad, like a warning. I giggle, but it comes out too sharp.
That awkward moment when you realize you've been making gay jokes in front of your gay kid for the last 17 years.
There's this awful, tense silence. My dad just looks at me.
Finally, my mom comes back in, and she looks back and forth between us for a minute. And then she says, I sent Abby and Nick home.
What? Mom!
I stand up too fast, and my stomach flips.
No, no, I'm just here to get my shirt.
Oh, I think you're staying in tonight, says my mom. Your dad and I need a minute to talk. Why don't you go get yourself a glass of water, and we'll be right in.
I'm not thirsty.
It's not a request, says my mom. They have to be fucking kidding me. I'm supposed to sit here and drink my water, and they just get to talk about me behind my back. I slam the kitchen door shut. As soon as the water hits my lips, I gulp it down so fast I almost forget to breathe. My stomach is churning. I think the water makes it worse. I pretzel my arms on the table and tuck my head into my elbow. I'm so freaking tired. My parents come in a few minutes later and sit down next to me at the table. Did you have water? Asks my dad. I nudge my empty glass toward him without lifting my head. Good, he says. He pauses. Kid, we've got to talk consequences.
Right, because things aren't shitty enough. People at school think I'm a joke, and there's a boy I can't seem to stop being in love with, and he just might be someone I can't stand. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to puke tonight. But yeah, they want to talk consequences.
We've discussed it, and presumably this is a first offense.
I nod into my arms.
Then your mom and I have agreed that you'll be grounded for 2 weeks starting tomorrow.
I whip my head up.
You can't do that.
Oh, I can't?
It's the play next weekend.
Oh, we're well aware, says my dad.
And you can go to school and rehearsals and all of your performances, but you'll come straight home afterward. And your laptop is moving into the living room for a week.
And I'll take your phone right now, says my mom, putting out her hand. All business.
That's so effed up, I say.
Because that's what you say. But I mean, honestly, I don't even fucking care.
29. It's MLK weekend, so we don't get back to school until Tuesday. When I get there, Abby's waiting in front of my locker.
Where have you been? I've been texting you all weekend. Are you okay?
I'm fine, I say, rubbing my eyes.
I was really worried about you when your mom came out.
Your mom is actually kind of terrifying. I thought she was going to give me a breathalyzer.
Oh, God.
Sorry, I say. They're really intense about driving.
Abby steps aside so I can twist in my locker combination.
No, it was fine, she says. I just felt bad leaving you. And then when I didn't hear back from you all weekend, I clicked the latch open. They took my phone away. And my computer. And I'm grounded for 2 weeks. I dig around for my French notebook.
So, yeah.
Abby's face falls.
But what about the play?
No, that's fine. They're not messing with that. I push my locker closed, and the latch clicks dully.
Well, good, she says.
But I'm so sorry. This is all my fault.
What's your fault?
Nick asks, falling into step with us on the way to English.
Simon's grounded, she says.
It's not your fault at all, I say. I'm the one who got drunk and paraded it in front of my parents.
Not your best move, says Nick.
I look at him. Something's different, and I can't quite pin it down. Then I realize it's the hands. They're holding hands. My head snaps up to look at them, and they both smile self-consciously.
Nick shrugs.
Well, 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 I say. I guess you guys didn't miss me too much Friday night after all.
Not really, says Nick.
Abby buries her face in his shoulder. I pry the story out of Abby during small group conversation practice in French class.
So how did it go down? Tell me everything.
C'était une surprise, I add as Madame Blanc makes her way up my row.
C'était une surprise, Simone, au féminin.
You have to love French teachers.
They make such a big freaking deal about gender, but they always pronounce my name like Simone. Nous étions... Abby smiles up at Madame Blanc, and then waits for her to move out of earshot. Yeah, so we drop you off, and I was kind of upset, because your mom seemed really mad, and I didn't want her to think I would drink and drive. She wouldn't have let you drive home if she thought that. Yeah, well, Abby says. I don't know. Anyway, we left, but we ended up just parking in Nick's driveway for a while. Just in case you were able to talk your parents into letting you come back out. Yeah, sorry. No dice. Oh, I know, she says. I just felt weird leaving without you. We texted you, and then we waited for a little while. Sorry, I say again. No, it was fine, Abby says. And then she breaks into a huge grin. C'était magnifique. Lunch is actually amazing, because Morgan and Bram both had birthdays over the long weekend, and Lee is very strict about everyone getting their own giant sheet cake, which means two cakes, both chocolate. Except I don't know who brought the cakes today, because Leah never shows up for lunch at all. And now that I think about it, she wasn't in English or French. I reach into my back pocket automatically, but then I remember my phone is in custody. So I lean over toward Anna, who's wearing two party hats and eating a pile of straight-up icing. Hey, where's Leah? Says Anna, not meeting my eyes. She's here. She's at school? Anna shrugs. I try not to worry about it, but I don't see her all day. And then I don't see her the next day either. Except Anna says she's here, and her car's in the parking lot, which makes it so much weirder. And her car's still in the parking lot at 7 when we finally get out of rehearsal. I'm not sure what's going on. I just want to make contact. Maybe there are missed texts from her on my phone that I don't even know about. Or maybe not. I don't know. It just sucks. But on Thursday afternoon, in that narrow window between school and rehearsal, I finally see her stepping out of the bathroom near the atrium. Leah! I run over to her and catch her in a hug. Where have you been? She stiffens in my arms. I step back. Is everything okay? She looks at me with jagged eyes. I don't want to talk to you, she says. She tugs her shirt down and then folds her arms up under her chest. What? I look at her. Leah, what happened? You tell me, she says. How was Friday? Did you, Nick, and Abby have fun? There's this beat of silence. I don't know what you want me to say, I tell her. I mean, I'm sorry. You sound really sorry, she says. A couple of freshman girls scamper past us, shrieking and chasing each other and body-slamming the door. We pause. Well, I am sorry, I say, once the door shuts behind them. I mean, if this is about Nick and Abby, I don't know what to tell you. Right. This is all about Nick and Abby. I mean, she laughs, shaking her head. Whatever. Well, what? Do you actually want to talk about it? I ask. Or do you just want to be really sarcastic and not tell me what's going on? Because if you're just going to laugh at me, seriously, you're going to have to wait in line. Oh, poor Simon. Okay, you know what? Forget it. I'm going to go to my fucking dress rehearsal now, and you can find me whenever you're ready to not be an asshole. I turn around and start walking, trying to ignore the lump rising in my throat. Awesome, she says. Have fun. Say hi to your BFF for me. Leah, I turn around. Please, just stop. She shakes her head slightly, and her lips are pulled in, and she's blinking and blinking. I mean, it's cool. But next time you guys decide to all hang out without me, she says, text me some pictures or something. Just so I can pretend I still have friends. Then there's this noise, like an aborted sob, and she pushes past me straight through the door. And all through rehearsal, all I can hear is that noise over and over again. 30. I get home, and all I want to do is walk somewhere. Anywhere. but as it stands, I'm not even allowed to walk my freaking dog. And I feel so restless and strange and unhappy. I hate it when Leah's mad at me. Hate it. I'm not saying it doesn't happen a lot, because there's this hidden emotional subtext with Leah, and I'm always missing it. But this feels different and worse than our normal. She was just so mean about everything. Also, it's the first time I've ever seen Leah cry. Dinner is grilled cheese and Oreos, because my parents are still working and Nora's out again, and then I basically spend the evening staring at my ceiling fan. I don't have it in me to do my homework. No one's going to expect it from me anyway with the play opening tomorrow. I listen to music, and I'm bored and antsy and honestly miserable. Then around 9, my parents come in wanting to talk. Just when I thought today couldn't get any better. "Can I sit?" asks my mom, sort of hovering over the end of the bed. I shrug and she sits, and my dad takes my desk chair. I tuck my hands behind my head and sigh. Let me guess, don't get drunk. I mean, yeah, my dad says. Don't get drunk. Got it. They look at each other. My dad clears his throat. I owe you an apology, kid. I look up at him. What you said on Friday about the gay jokes? I was kidding, I say. It's fine. No, my dad says. It's not really fine. I shrug. Well, I'm just going to put this out there in case the message got lost somewhere. I love you. A lot. No matter what. And I know it's got to be awesome having the cool dad. Ahem, says my mom. Excuse me. The cool parents. The hardcore, badass, hipster parents. Oh, it's awesome, I say. But rein us in if you need to, okay? Rein me in, he says. He rubs his chin. I know I didn't make it easy for you to come out. We're very proud of you. You're a pretty brave kid. Thanks, I say. I pull myself up and lean against the wall, thinking it's a good time for hair ruffling and sleep tight, kid, and don't stay up too late. But they don't move. So I say, well, for the record, I knew you were kidding. That's not the reason I didn't want to come out. My parents look at each other again. Can I ask you what the reason was? Says my mom. I mean, there wasn't like a specific reason, I say. I just didn't want to have to talk about it. I knew it would be a big deal. I don't know. Was it a big deal? Says my mom. Well, yeah. I'm sorry, she says. Did we make it a big deal? Oh my God, seriously? You guys make everything a big deal. Really? She says. When I started drinking coffee, when I started shaving, when I got a girlfriend, that stuff is exciting, she says. It's not that exciting, I say. It's like, I don't even know. You guys are so freaking obsessed with everything I do. It's like I can't change my socks without someone mentioning it. Ah, says my dad. So what you're trying to say is that we're really creepy. Yes, I say. My mom laughs. See, but you're not a parent yet, so you can't understand. It's like, you have this baby, and eventually he starts doing stuff. And I used to be able to see every tiny change, and it was so fascinating. She smiles sadly. And now I'm missing stuff. The little things. And it's hard to let go of that. But I'm 17. Don't you think I'm supposed to be changing? Of course you are, and I love it. It's the most exciting time, she says. She squeezes the end of my foot. I'm just saying, I wish I could still watch it all unfold. I don't quite know what to say. You guys are just so grown up now, she continues. All three of you. And you're all so different. I mean, even when you were babies, Alice was fearless, and Nora was so self-contained, and then you were this complete ham. I mean, everyone kept saying you were your father's son. My dad grins, and I'm honestly a little bit speechless. I have never, ever thought of myself that way. I actually remember holding you for the first time. Your little mouth. You latched right onto my breast.
Mom?
Oh, it was the most incredible moment. And your dad carried your sister in, and she kept saying, "No, baby." My mom laughs. I couldn't take my eyes off you. I couldn't believe we were the parents of a boy. I guess we had gotten so used to thinking of ourselves as girl parents, so it was like this whole new thing to discover. Sorry I didn't turn out to be much of a boy, I say. My dad spins the chair around to face me directly.
Are you kidding me?
Sort of. You're an awesome boy, he says.
You're like a ninja.
Well, thank you.
You're freaking welcome, he says.
There's this distant slam of the front door shutting and dog nails skittering across the hardwoods. Nora's home.
Listen, says my mom, poking my foot again.
I don't want to cramp your style, but maybe you could just humor us. Keep us in the loop about stuff where you can, and we'll try not to be weird and obsessed.
Fair enough, I say.
Good, she says. They look at each other again. Anyway, we have something for you.
Is it another awkward anecdote about me breastfeeding? Oh my God, you were all about the boob, my dad says. I can't believe you turned out to be gay.
Hilarious, Dad.
I know I am, he says.
Then he stands up and pulls something out of his pocket.
Here, he says, tossing it.
My phone.
You're still grounded, but you get parole this weekend. And you can get your laptop back after the play tomorrow if you remember all your lines.
I don't have any lines, I say slowly.
Then you don't have anything to worry about, kid.
But it's sort of funny, because even without any lines to mess up, I'm nervous. Excited and fluttery and amped up and nervous. As soon as the dismissal bell rings, Ms. Albright takes Abby, Martin, Taylor, and a few of the others to do an extra vocal warm-up in the music room, but the rest of us just sit there on the floor of the auditorium eating pizza. Cal's running around dealing with the tech people, and it's kind of a relief to just be hanging out with a bunch of random senior girls at the moment. No Calvin Coolidge or Martin Van Buren or any other confusing presidential boys. No Leah looking at me with weapons for eyes. The show begins at 7, but Ms. Albright wants us fully in costume by 6. I put in my contact lenses and get changed early, and then I sit around in the girls' dressing room waiting for Abby. It's 5:30 by the time she gets there, and she's clearly in a weird mood. She barely says hello. I pull my chair beside her and watch her apply her makeup.
Are you nervous? I ask.
A little. She stares into the mirror, sort of dabbing a mascara wand against her eyelashes.
Nick's coming tonight, right?
Yep. These clipped, abrupt answers. She almost seems annoyed.
When you're done, I say, will you help me be ridiculously hot?
Eyeliner? She asks. Okay, one sec.
Abby brings over her makeup bag and pulls her chair across from mine. At this point, we're the only ones left in the dressing room. She uncaps the pencil and pulls my eyelid taut, and I try not to squirm.
You're so quiet, I say after a moment. Is everything okay?
She doesn't answer. I feel the pencil push across the edge of my lashes. Scritch, scritch, scritch.
Abby, I ask. The pencil lifts away, and I open my eyes.
Keep them closed, she says. Then she starts my other eyelid.
She's quiet for a minute, and then she says, what was this whole thing with Martin?
With Martin? I ask,
and my stomach twists. He told me everything, she says, but I'd sort of like to hear it from you. I feel frozen in place.
Everything?
But what does that even mean?
The blackmail thing?
Yeah, she says.
That.
Okay, open them.
She starts tracing the bottom lid, and I fight the urge to blink.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because, I say.
I don't know. I didn't tell anyone. And you just went along with it?
I didn't exactly have much of a choice.
But you knew I wasn't attracted to him, right?
She caps the pencil again.
Yeah, I say. I did.
Abby leans back for a moment to examine me, before sighing and leaning forward again.
I'm going to even this out, she says, and then she's quiet.
I'm sorry. Suddenly it feels so important for her to understand. I didn't know what to do. He was going to tell everyone. I really didn't want to help him. I barely did help him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's why he ended up even posting that thing on the Tumblr, because I wasn't helping him enough.
No, I get it, she says.
She finishes with the pencil and then smudges everything with her finger. A moment later, I feel her run some poofy makeup brush all over my cheeks and nose.
I'm done, she says, and I open my eyes.
She looks at me and frowns.
It's just, you know, I get that you are in a difficult position, but you don't get to make the decisions about my love life. I choose who I date.
She shrugs.
I would think you would understand that.
I hear myself inhale.
I'm so sorry.
I hang my head. I mean, I wish I could just disappear.
Well, you know, it is what it is.
She shrugs.
I'm gonna head out there, okay?
Okay, I nod.
Maybe someone else could do your makeup tomorrow, she says.
The play goes fine. I mean, it's better than fine. Taylor is perfectly earnest, and Martin is perfectly crotchety, and Abby is so lively and funny that it's almost like our conversation in the dressing room never happened. But after it's over, she disappears without saying goodbye, and Nick's gone by the time I get out of costume, and I have no idea if Leah was here at all. So yeah, the play's great. I'm the one who's miserable. I meet my parents and Nora in the atrium, and my dad's carrying this giant bouquet of flowers that looks like something out of Dr. Seuss, because even without a speaking part, I'm apparently God's gift to theater. And all the way home, they hum the songs and talk about Taylor's amazing voice and ask me if I'm friends with the hilarious kid with the beard, a.k.a. Martin. God, what a question. I reunite with my laptop as soon as we get home. To be honest, I'm more confused than ever. I guess it's not a huge surprise that Leah's pissed about last Friday. I think she's going a little overboard with it, but I get it. I probably had it coming. But Abby? It honestly hit me out of nowhere. It's weird, because of all the things I feel guilty about, it never occurred to me to feel guilty about Abby. But I'm a fucking idiot. Because who you like can't be forced or persuaded or manipulated. If anyone knows that, it's me. I'm a shitty friend. Worse than a shitty friend, because I should be begging for Abby's forgiveness right now, and I'm not. I'm too busy wondering what exactly Martin told her. Because it doesn't sound like he mentioned anything other than the blackmail. Which could mean he doesn't want to admit that he's blue. Or it could mean he's not blue at all. And the thought of Blue being someone other than Martin gives me this breathless, hopeful feeling. Actually hopeful, despite the mess I've made. Despite the drama. Despite everything. Because even with all the shit that's gone down this week, I still care about Blue. The way I feel about him is like a heartbeat. Soft and persistent, underlying everything. I log into my Jacques email, and when I do, something clicks. And it isn't Simon logic. It's objective, indisputable truth. Every email Blue ever sent me is time-stamped. So many of the emails were sent right after school. So many were sent when I was in rehearsal. Which means Martin was also in rehearsal, with no time to write and no wireless internet. Blue isn't Martin. He's not Cal. He's just someone. So I go all the way back to the beginning. Back to August, and I read through everything. His subject lines, every line of every email. I have no idea who he is. No freaking clue. But I think I'm falling for him again. 31.
from hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 25th at 9:27 a.m. Subject, us. Blue. I've been writing and deleting and rewriting this email all weekend, and I still can't get it right. But I'm going to do this. So here we go. I know I haven't written in a while. It's been a weird couple of weeks. So first I want to say this. I know who you are. I mean, I still don't know your name, or what you look like, or all the other stuff. But you have to understand that I really do know you. I know that you're smart and careful and weird and funny. And you notice things and listen to things, but not in a nosy way. In a real way. You overthink things and remember details, and you always, always say the right thing. And I think I like that we got to know each other from the inside out. So it occurred to me that I've been spending a lot of time thinking about you and rereading your emails and trying to make you laugh. But I've been spending very little time spelling things out for you and taking chances and putting my heart on the line. Obviously, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here, but what I'm trying to say is that I like you. I more than like you. When I flirt with you, it's not a joke. And when I say I want to know you, it's not just because I'm curious. I'm not going to pretend I know how this ends, and I don't have a freaking clue if it's possible to fall in love over email. But I would really like to meet you, Blue. I want to try this. And I can't imagine a scenario where I won't want to kiss your face off as soon as I see you. Just wanted to make that perfectly clear. So what I'm trying to say is that there's an extremely badass carnival in the parking lot of Perimeter Mall today, and it's apparently open until 9. For what it's worth, I'll be there at 6:30, and I hope I see you. Love, Simon. 32. I click send and try not to think about it, but I'm restless and punchy and jittery all the way to school. And cranking Sufjan Stevens at top volume doesn't solve anything, which is probably why people don't crank Sufjan Stevens. My stomach is apparently on a spin cycle. First I put my costume on backward, and then I spend 10 minutes looking for my contact lenses before remembering I'm wearing them. I've achieved Martin levels of twitchiness. Brianna has a ridiculous time putting on my eyeliner. And all through the bustle and pep talks and swelling of the overture, my mind is stuck on blue, blue, blue. I don't know how I make it through the performance. I honestly don't remember half of it. Afterward, there's this big goopy scene on stage of people hugging and thanking the audience and thanking the crew and thanking the orchestra. All the seniors get roses, and Cal gets a bouquet of them, and Ms. Albright's bouquet is off the freaking charts. My dad calls it the Sunday matinee tear fest, which quickly inspired the Sunday afternoon unavoidable golf conflict. I don't even blame him. But then I think about Ms. Albright making it her life's mission to get those in-the-butt guys suspended, and how pissed off and determined she looked, slapping the handbook down on that chair backstage. I wish I had brought her another bouquet, or a card, or a freaking tiara. I don't know. Something just for me. Then we have to get dressed again, and we have to strike the set. Everything takes forever. I never wear a watch, but I pull my phone out again and again and again to check the time. 5:24, 5:31, 5:40. Every part of me twists and flips and screams with anticipation. At 6 I leave. I just walk out the door. And it's so warm outside. I mean, it's warm for January. I want to be less excited, because who the hell knows what Blue is thinking, and who the hell knows what I'm setting myself up for. But I can't help it. I just have a good feeling. I keep thinking about what my dad said. You're pretty brave, kid. Maybe I am. The carnival is basically our cast party, and everyone's driving straight from school to the mall, except for me. I make a left at the light and drive home, because I don't care if it's January. I want the t-shirt. It's under my pillow, soft and white and neatly folded, with its wall of red and black swirls and a picture of Elliot standing in front. black and white, except for his hand. I pull it on quickly and grab a cardigan to throw over it. At this point, I have to haul ass to the mall if I'm going to make it by 6:30. Except there's something stiff and pokey between my shoulder blades, in that exact spot you can never quite scratch. I slide my arm underneath the hem and up through the bottom. A piece of paper is taped to the fabric inside. I catch it and tug it out. It's another note on blue-green construction paper, and it starts with a postscript. My fingers tremble as I read it. P.S. I love the way you smile like you don't realize you're doing it. I love your perpetual bedhead. I love the way you hold eye contact a moment longer than you need to. And I love your moon-gray eyes. So if you think I'm not attracted to you, Simon, you're crazy. And underneath that, he's written his phone number. There's a tingling feeling that radiates outward from a point below my stomach. Wrenching and wonderful and almost unbearable. I've never been so aware of my heartbeat. Blue and his vertical handwriting and the word love repeated over and over again. Not to mention the fact that I could call him right this second and know who he is. But I think I won't call. Not yet. Because for all I know, he's waiting for me. For real. In person. Which means I have to get to the mall. It's almost 7 by the time I get there, and I'm kicking myself for being so late. It's already dark, but the carnival is noisy and lit and alive. I love these pop-up carnivals. I love that a parking lot in January can be transformed into summer at Coney Island. I see Cal and Brianna and a couple of the seniors standing in line to get tickets, so I make my way toward them. I'm worried that it's too dark, and I'm worried, of course, that Blue has come and gone, but it's impossible to know when I don't know who I'm looking for. We all buy tons of tickets, and then we ride everything. There's a Ferris wheel and a carousel and bumper cars and flying swings. We fold our legs up into the baby train and ride that too. And then we all get hot chocolate and drink it sitting on the curb near the concession stand. I stare at everyone walking, and every time someone looks down and makes eye contact, my heart goes haywire. I spot Abby and Nick sitting in front of the games, holding hands and eating popcorn. Nick has a holy buttload of stuffed animals lined up around his feet. "There's no way he won all of these for you," I say to Abby. I feel nervous as I walk up to her. I'm not sure we're on speaking terms. But she smiles up at me. "Not even. I won these for him." "It's that crane game," says Nick. "She's a total boss. I think she's cheating." He nudges her sideways. "Keep thinking that," says Abby. I laugh, feeling shy. "Sit with us," she says. "Are you sure?" "Yeah." She scoots closer to Nick to make room. Then she leans her head against my shoulder for a moment and whispers, "I'm sorry, Simon." "Are you kidding me?" "I'm sorry," I say. "I'm so sorry." I've thought about it, and you definitely get a pass when you're being blackmailed." "Oh, really?" "Yep," she says, and because I can't stay mad when I'm deliriously happy. I can't see Nick's face, but he taps the toe of his sneaker against her ballet flat, and they seem to shift closer to each other. "You guys are going to be a really gross couple, aren't you?" I say. "Probably," says Nick. Abby looks at me and says, "So is that the shirt?" "What?" I ask, blushing. "The shirt that Drunky McDrunkbutt made me drive all the way across town for." "Oh," I say. "Yeah." "I'm guessing there's a story behind it?" I shrug. "Does it have to do with the guy you're looking for?" she asks. "This is about a guy, right?" I almost choke. "The guy I'm looking for?" "Simon," she says, putting her hand on my arm. "You're obviously looking for someone. Your eyes are everywhere." "Humph," I say, burying my face. "You know, it's okay to be kind of romantic," she says. "I'm not romantic." "Right," Abby laughs. "I forgot. You and Nick are so cynical."
"Wait, what did I do?"
asks Nick. Abby leans into him, but looks up at me.
Hey, I hope you find him, okay? She says.
Okay. But it's 8:30, and I still haven't found him. Or he hasn't found me. It's hard to know what to think.
He likes me. I mean, that's basically what the note said. But the note was written 2 weeks ago. It almost kills me. 2 weeks with a shirt under my freaking pillow, and I had no idea what was tucked away inside of it. I know it's been said, but I'm a monumental idiot. I mean, in 2 weeks he could have changed his mind about me. The carnival shuts down in half an hour, and my friends have all gone home. I should go too. But I have another couple of tickets, so I blow most of them on midway games and save my last one for the Tilt-A-Whirl. I figure it's the last place I'll find Blue, so I've been avoiding it all night. There's no line at all. I walk straight onto the ride. The Tilt-A-Whirl has these metal pods with domed tops, and there's a metal wheel in the middle that you can turn to make your pod spin. And then the ride itself whirls around quickly, and the whole point is just to get you dizzy. Or maybe the point is to empty your head. I'm alone in my seat, with a seat belt pulled as tight as I can make it. A couple of girls squeeze into the pod next to mine, and the operator walks over to latch the gate. Almost all the other pods are empty. I lean back and shut my eyes. And then someone slides in beside me. "Can I sit here?" he asks, and my eyes snap open. It's cute Bram Greenfeld, of the soft eyes and soccer calves. I loosen the seatbelt to let him in, and I smile at him. It's impossible not to.
"I like your shirt," he says. He seems nervous.
"Thanks," I say. "It's Elliot Smith." The operator reaches over us and pulls the guardrail down, locking us in.
"I know," says Bram.
There's something in his voice. I turn to him slowly, and his eyes are wide and brown and totally open. There's this pause. We're still looking at each other, and there's this feeling in my stomach like a coil pulled taut.
"It's you," I say.
"I know I'm late," he says. Then there's a grinding noise and a jolt and a swell of music. Someone shrieks and then laughs, and the ride spins to life. Bram's eyes are clenched shut and his chin is locked down. He's perfectly silent. He cups his hands over his nose and mouth. I hold the metal wheel in place with both hands, but it keeps pulling into a clockwise rotation. It's like the ride wants to spin. And it spins and it spins.
"Sorry,"
he says when it finally stops, and his voice is stretched thin, and his eyes are still closed.
"It's okay," I say. "Are you okay?"
He nods and exhales and says,
"Yeah, I will be."
We step off the ride and make it to the curb, and he leans all the way forward, tucking his head between his knees. I settle in beside him, feeling awkward and jittery and almost drunk.
"I just got your email," he says. "I was sure I was going to miss you."
"I can't believe it's you," I say.
"It's me," he says.
His eyes slide open.
"You really didn't know?"
"Not a clue," I say. I study his profile. He has these lips that meet just barely, like the slightest touch would coax them open. His ears are slightly big, and there are two freckles on his cheekbone, and his eyelashes are more dramatic than I've ever noticed. He turns toward me, and I look away quickly.
"I thought I was so obvious," he says.
I shake my head. He stares straight ahead.
"I think I wanted you to know."
"Then why didn't you just tell me?"
"Because," he says, and his voice sort of shakes, and I'm aching to touch him. Quite honestly, I've never wanted anything so badly in my life. "Because if you had been looking for it to be me, I think you would have guessed it yourself." I don't quite know how to respond to that. I don't know if it's true or not.
"But you never gave me clues," I say finally.
I did, he says, smiling. My email address. Bluegreen118, I say. Bram Lewis Greenfeld. My birthday. Jesus, I'm an idiot. No, you're not, he says softly. But I am. I'm an idiot. I was looking for him to be Cal, and I guess I assumed that blue would be white, which kind of makes me want to smack myself. White shouldn't be the default, any more than straight should be the default. There shouldn't even be a default. I'm sorry, I say. For what? For not figuring it out. But it would be completely unfair of me to expect that, he says. You guessed it was me. Well, yeah, he says. He looks down. I kind of guessed a long time ago. Except I thought maybe I was just seeing what I wanted to see. Seeing what he wanted to see. I think that means Bram wanted it to be me. There's this twist in my stomach, and my brain feels hazy. I clear my throat. I guess I should have shut up about who my English teacher is. Wouldn't have helped. Oh, no? He smiles slightly and turns away. You sort of talk the way you write. No freaking way. I'm kind of hardcore grinning now. In the distance, they begin shutting down the rides and turning off lights. There's something beautiful and eerie about a darkened, unmoving Ferris wheel. Beyond the carnival, the lights turn off in the doorways of the department stores. I know my parents expect me home. But I scoot closer to Bram, until our arms are almost touching, and I can feel him twitch just slightly. Our pinky fingers are maybe an inch apart, and it's as if an invisible current runs between them. But how are you a president? I ask. What? The same first name as a former president. Oh, he says. Abraham. Oh. We're quiet for a moment. And I can't believe you rode the tilt-a-whirl for me. I must really like you, he says. So I lean in toward him, and my heart is in my throat. I want to hold your hand, I say softly. Because we're in public. Because I don't know if he's out. So hold it, he says. And I do. 33. In English class on Monday, my eyes find Bram immediately. He sits on the couch beside Garrett, wearing a collared shirt under his sweater, and he's so freaking adorable that it almost hurts to look at him. Hi, hi, I say. He smiles like he's been waiting for me, when he scoots over to make room. Good job this weekend, Spear, says Garrett. Pretty friggin' funny. I didn't know you were there. I mean, he says, Greenfeld made me go 3 times. Oh, really? I say, grinning at Bram. And then he grins back, and I'm giddy and breathless and kind of unraveled. And I didn't sleep at all last night. Not even for a second. I've basically been picturing this moment for 10 hours, and now that it's here, I don't have a clue what I'm supposed to say. Probably something awesome and witty and not school-related. Probably not. Did you finish the chapter? I did, he says. I didn't, I say. Then he smiles, and I smile. And then I blush, and he lowers his eyes. And it's like this entire pantomime of nervous gestures. Mr. Weiss comes in and starts reading aloud from The Awakening, and we're supposed to follow along in our own copies. But I keep losing my place. I've never been so distracted. So I lean in to look on with Bram, and his body shifts toward me. I'm perfectly attuned to every point of contact between us. It's like our nerve endings have found a way to slip through fabric. And then Bram stretches his legs forward and pushes his knee into mine, which means the rest of the period is pretty much devoted to staring at Bram's knee. There's a place where his jeans are fraying, and a tiny patch of brown skin is barely visible between the fibers of the denim, and all I want to do is touch it. At one point, Bram and Garrett both turn to look at me, and I realize I've just sighed out loud. After class, Abby hooks an arm around my shoulders and says, "I didn't realize you and Bram were such good friends." "Hush," I say.